So I'm on the line with Alicia Kuhl of the Santa Cruz Homeless Union, and Alicia, you've recently spoken to some media people about what has been called the scabies controversy. Tell us a little bit about that.
All right. So I heard from one of the camp residents, Greg.
1220 River Street.
What's that? Greg Benson from 1220 River Street, that there were a couple of incidences of scabies at the camp. And so during our protest, while we were over there at 1220 River doing a protest in the front, I asked the director, Eric Snickars, if I could talk to him. He refused to talk on camera, and he made us go over to the side of the storage container. And he confirmed to me what I consider a confirmation. He said, yeah, we're working on that. I told him I heard about the couple of incidences of scabies, and he said, yeah, we're working on that. And we had conversations about other things like the water and, you know, when they were going to get some showers. And all he ever says is, we're working on it, we're working on it. The bottom line is, I don't trust him to get anything really done. He's a very nice guy, but things just are just not getting done over there. So I made the complaint to Environmental Health, hoping that they would put a push on them towards getting some showers over there.
And did you have any follow-up on that? Did you hear what they're doing or not doing?
I heard that they were addressing that, taking it very seriously, and going to be following up, but they didn't tell me what the plan was.
Mm-hmm. And you haven't heard of any new movement towards showers or additional medical treatment?
No, and so I'm still concerned. I'm still concerned that they don't have showers over there. You know, it was when I made the complaint over 4 months, since some people at least have had showers over there, I got reports, you were there, from Rosemary that only had a washcloth in her tent for over 4 months to bathe. And even though she tried to get down to HPHV, where they say you can get showers, she wasn't able to get a shower down there. She, for whatever reason, gets there, the list is full, she can't get a shower, and so people are not guaranteed a shower. So although that is available, it is not guaranteed. So there are people who are not getting showers.
Well, I know that... when I did talk to Snickers, and that was a few minutes ago, Eric Snickars, the executive director at the 1220 River Street, that he told me that there is this, you know, probably less people are getting showers than before because of the fact that the remodeling at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I call their, what is it, Housing Forever or Housing One of These Years, or they have a new name.
They changed their name.
They have a new name there, you know, change the name, but game is the same. But anyway, the showers are according to Steve, a guy who tried to get showers, like you heard him speak at the Huff meeting yesterday, or at the Conscience in Action meeting, a little frantically, but still he was concerned that he tried to get showers at the Homeless Lack of Services Center in their new kind of mobile shower unit. And he said several of them, and I think I'll be playing his interview today on the show anyway, so maybe this will have already been played. So any showers has not proceeded. And I mean, I guess when I suggested to you, he told me he felt hurt that you had said that, that you had reported to Environmental Health these concerns instead of going to him, and yet, of course, you're telling me, and I believe you, because I actually heard this from you first, some around the time, right after we did our protest, which was about, a month ago now, I think, at least, or around then. The protest was around the same issues. Get the showers, let visitors in and out, give people a private place to have visitors, do something about the heat, put in some refrigeration, get some potable water. He does say that... They have potable water now they have drinkable water that's actually decent tasting that he brings in from a friend of his who has water and donates it. And he says he brings in these big 10-gallon jugs and they last 3 days, he says. Has been doing it for 2 weeks, you know, and good for him for doing that.
And that's great. I'm grateful. thankful for what they are providing, but I'm still concerned for what's not being provided, and that those are the basic needs of life. Showers are extremely important. They're especially extremely important to any type of transition as far as employment, finding another place to live. These are all things that need to be considered that I feel like are not being considered. And, are, you know, if there's a stall on it, what kind of place opens for 4 months without a shower? I mean, and houses, you know, 60-plus people, even campgrounds have to have showers. I think it's illegal not to have a shower. I wouldn't be able to open an apartment, put 60 people in there without, you know, running flavor-tasting decent water that doesn't taste like plastic and showers. I mean, you just can't do that.
You know, I know you also spoke to two television stations and possibly a newspaper, KION, KSBW, and the Pajaronian of Watsonville, about the outcome of the Ross Camp lawsuit. What I'd like to do is play you the audio of the KSBW and also play it for our audience and get you to comment on it. Have you got the time to do that?
Sure.
Okay, hang on. So here is this, it's online for those who want to see the KSBW interview. It's also, there's a transcript. It's entitled Homeless Suits Dismissed. And here is what we got.
The deadline and that fell through the cracks. The judge did give us another opportunity.
That's you.
The deadline and that fell through the cracks. The judge did give us another opportunity, but because, like the things that I told you, it's pretty much moot at this point, we just didn't do it.
Instead of following through with their lawsuit, Alicia Kuhl says homeless advocates were busy trying to keep the Ross Camp open. The city did file a motion to dismiss the case. The plaintiffs failed to respond in time, despite an extension provided by a federal judge.
Any comment on that, Alicia?
No, I mean, he left out a little part of what we said. We also pointed out the fact that we are pro se plaintiffs. We didn't have a lot of resources. We were new to the process. And primarily, we were trying to keep the Ross Camp from being closed. And we were also focused on the fact that people were getting displaced. And you know what the city was and wasn't doing that they said they were going to do. We were collecting evidence of that, seeing how many people got motel vouchers for how many days and didn't. There was a lot of things we were focused on, and so we did miss the deadline. And then it's very true that when it came time that the judge, just like what last month, said, okay, I'll give you more time to do it. At this point, it just doesn't make sense to follow through, since our lawsuit was primarily based on, you know, please don't close the Ross Camp for all those different reasons, the harm that would come to people. And they've already done that, and the harm has already come to people. So to ask for them not to close the Ross Camp and to follow through with that process just seems kind of moot. We need to focus on what's happening right now.
What about the argument that the judge directed both you and the city to go into settlement discussions, myself as well, because I'm one of the plaintiffs as an organizational plaintiff,
right,
as you are. And I could answer this question, but I'd rather ask you. You know, certainly you and the other plaintiffs, myself included, created a long list of concerns that we raised, which I think are still quite relevant about what we think could be done, not just with respect to the Ross Camp, but with respect to the broader homeless population, even beyond the Ross Camp and beyond the
right.
Much smaller.
Well, we made requests like things that are pertinent to what happens now that they've displaced a bunch of people. We've made requests regarding that.
And well, why wouldn't that have been something you might have wanted to bring back to court? Or do you think that would have been futile?
Well, I really like that the judge advised us to meet and confer. I think he was hoping that we would come to a settlement agreement. And, of course, I was hoping that, too. But when we sent our list over to Mr. Condotti, the city attorney, and we also asked to meet with him to discuss what it would take to settle the lawsuit, he was just unwilling to even meet with us, which is really unfortunate because it's a missed opportunity. It's a missed opportunity to settle a bunch of things and to make agreements to things that were totally reasonable that have to do with, you know, basic needs. I believe one of the things on the list was showers at 1220, immediate showers. Another thing on the list was, you know, motel vouchers and laundry vouchers distributed, because, you know, not everybody was placed into alternative housing or shelter. And so they have needs now that are not being met. And so rather than criminalizing them, let's help them do their laundry and get motel once in a while and have showers. And so he didn't even want to meet with us to discuss any of those things.
Well, I notice I'm looking over this list of that we presented. It was 13 points. One was for asking the city to provide a list of all city-owned, city-controlled, and tax-delinquent vacant properties that we could work collaboratively with the city on assessing the physical status for the purpose of immediately housing folks displaced from the Ross camp, designate a homeless encampment and a safe RV and vehicle lot, study the full extent of homelessness in Santa Cruz, including those living on the streets, appoint to the CATCH, the Community Advisory Committee, three representatives chosen by plaintiffs, and then with regard to the shelters currently operating in Santa Cruz, which the Salvation Army runs two of, the Laurel Street and the 1220 River Street, ensure that there's transportation availability. Right now, you can't get transported except in their expensive shuttle. Town
hall. Well, right now, also, we ask for, like, some sort of transparency as to how many shelter beds are available at what shelter on any given night, preferably by, like, a website or something that people can access easily and say, oh, there's a spot for me here, there's a spot for me there, rather than go through all the rigmarole and get, you know, sent around places and not get into any place at all.
Yeah, I mean, there's I'm only reciting a third of these possible matters for settlement that we could have talked about, but I believe that City Attorney Anthony Condotti didn't want to do any of them. So anyway, here's a little more of the KION broadcast where you're a little bit quoted, but not a lot. Here we go.
Despite an extension provided by a federal judge.
Some activists who were really the impetus behind the lawsuit sought to prolong the case by attempting to file a notice of appeal and attempting to continue the litigation. Unfortunately, they just didn't follow through and file necessary paperwork. Unfortunately for them, that is.
The city.
Any comment on that?
Well, I would say that the follow-through actually was also avoided by him to a big extent, as in the fact that what we just discussed, we asked him for a settlement conference, he denied it. And so we didn't avoid any type of follow-through. We went through the case, we had a little bit of advice from an attorney, and so we did what he said to do.
Okay, here's a little more. Did you want anything else you wanted to add to that?
No, just ignore my children crying. It's their nap time.
No problem. Here we go. Assuming I can get the mute off here. Hang on.
File necessary paperwork. Unfortunately for them, that is.
The city was dishonest in saying that they had adequate available shelter for people. They only provided motel vouchers for a very few days. Essentially, all of those people, minus very few, a couple people that went to 1220 River, are out on the streets now.
Homeless advocates claim that's why campers ended up on the main beach and why others are now wandering the streets of Santa Cruz.
Any comment on that, Alicia?
That's absolutely accurate. All the people that were displaced that didn't get shelter, I mean, Susie O'Hara was very dishonest. She said that, I can't remember the exact language that she used. That's why I wish I had the court.
Susie O'Hara is, of course, the assistant city manager in charge of these homeless affairs.
Right. She convinced the judge and said something like, yes, Your Honor, no person will be displaced without being offered adequate shelter from the Ross camp. And that wasn't true. People were chasing Megan and Susie around all day trying to get motel vouchers. A lot of people that wanted one didn't get one. I have multiple declarations of that. So, and then they offered people only 2 days, and they said they were going to offer five with a renewal. People were getting their renewal for just after 2 days, and then the motel said that they were full and couldn't accommodate them. But that was only a small, select few group of people. Like, a lot of people didn't get offered anything at all and went to the main beach, and now there's a curfew on the main beach because they went there for refuge. So, yeah. It's all true.
And here's some more.
The city says they were not dishonest when they presented their evidence in federal court.
We did provide Judge Davila with a full kind of audit of what the city's intentions were about alternative shelter beds. At that time, we talked about Laurel Street and the VFW and the River Street Camp, in addition to motel vouchers.
Homeless.
Any comment?
That's not exactly what she said at all. Like I said, she said that no one would be sent away without being offered alternative available shelter. And that she wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't displace. The whole idea was to the city, are you going to displace hundreds of people without offering them adequate available shelter? And so they convinced the judge that they would not do that. And so the judge lifted the temporary restraining order and just let the city, you know, do what they were going to do, hoping in good faith that that's exactly what they would do. They would house everybody within the shelters that they did mention, but not exactly as she's saying and not exactly during that moment, because that was discussed during the court case several times, you know, what shelters were available, what their capacities were. But that's not what we're talking about right now. That was, are you going to offer everybody at the Ross Camp alternative available shelter, and how would you accommodate that? And that's when the motel vouchers came in. So the motel vouchers were supposed to go to everyone who wasn't available to go to a shelter. That did not happen.
And in fact, what Susie did say in this is and I'll actually review it here for our listeners. Let's see if we've got this here. Here she is.
The city says they were not dishonest when they presented their evidence in federal court.
We did provide Judge Davila with a full kind of audit of what the city's intentions were.
Notice the word, what the city's intentions were.
Right, that's a whole lot different than what the city did and has done.
Or what the city had the capacity to do.
See, right, she's changing the language like she always does, and that's... I don't know, you can't really do that. What you said in federal court is what you said in federal court. You can't really change the language afterwards. And, you know, she can, at this point, say whatever she wants. I think that the proof is in the pudding, and we have people camping all over the place, and there many of them will tell you that they're former Ross Camp residents. So what does that tell you? That right there is the evidence of that. So she can say whatever she wants. There are hundreds of people that were living at the Ross Camp that are now camped all over the city.
And continuing, here we go.
About alternative shelter beds. At that time, we talked about Laurel Street and the VFW and the River Street Camp, in addition to motel vouchers.
Homeless advocates may have lost this round, but that doesn't mean they are giving up.
So right now we're gathering that evidence, we're taking declarations, and we're proving that the city was dishonest, and we're essentially going to start a new lawsuit. The Rivers.
So I have to ask you this, because as a Huff activist, I'm often skeptical of these legal maneuvers, particularly when they're pushed by people who have really an additional agenda. And I, you know, I admit I'm responsible to a large extent, to some extent anyway, for getting this thing rolling by inviting Anthony Prince to come to a meeting. And when he came to one of our meetings, asking him, what will you do to help? And he offered to help us all do a lawsuit. And he indeed started a lawsuit, and he indeed has carried through to some extent and mobilized you to carry through a lot. But it seems to me that the amount of energy and resources necessary to actually successfully do a lawsuit...
Well, it'd be really great if right now the ACLU would really get involved and help us.
I'm going to interrupt you again here, Alicia. I'm interrupting you. I'm interrupting you again, Alicia. I'm interrupting you because this is an old story. I've heard frequently from Anthony Prince that, you know, wouldn't it be great if so-and-so got involved? And indeed, we had an ACLU attorney once talking to us, but we've repeatedly heard that they're not getting involved so far, although there's always a new possibility, the National Law Center for the Homelessness and so forth. I'm not saying that won't happen. But what I'm saying is, given the resources we have on the ground, is it fair to tell homeless people that they can realistically expect a lawsuit in the next 6 months showing up in court? Now, I know you would love to see it happen. You would get out there and do it to the best.
Well, I think that we've done a lot of the work already, Robert. We have like 60 declarations. I mean, yes, we need a little bit of assistance from an attorney, but if you're asking me, could we do it ourselves with what we have on the ground? Yeah, if a couple of Huff members would step in and help write it up, and we had some copies made, and you know, some people on the ground to go around and talk with people. Yeah, I think we could, especially in 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Well, my... My point here, Alicia, is always not... My point is not could it happen, but is it really likely to happen based upon the resources we have, the people who are willing to put in energy, the folks who are struggling not to lose their vehicles and their homes?
Well, I'm not psychic, but I hope so. I mean, we pulled together the last one. It was slightly deficient in some areas, though, and that's, you know, what we learned about, what I'm hoping that we can avoid.
Well, and that's what I was asking for, was your own realistic assessment of that. And your energy and your enthusiasm are impressive. And that's just how it is. But I see few other people, perhaps Keith McHenry is an additional person who is, and Wes White of Salinas. But these folks are also doing full-time work elsewhere. I don't see the interns coming, and I don't see the others coming yet. But if I do see it happening, I'll be the first to shout, hurrah!
I mean, it's not an easy road.
Right, I mean, it's not just that. It's that I don't want to be telling people something is going to happen when it's not. As though it's, oh yeah, we have another lawsuit coming right down the pike.
Well, no, it's not an easy process. I never wanted to imply like it's right around the corner. That's why when people have asked for a time frame, like the media keeps asking, I've had two of them ask for a time frame, I'm not giving them a time frame. Like, we're seriously gonna, if we do it, we want to do it right. So I mean, I don't want to just throw anything out there. I want to make sure we have, you know, the number of plaintiffs that are correct. Everybody's reachable. We were getting things in the mail this last time because things were going to Homeless Services Center and they were getting sent back to the court. I want to make sure we don't have any issues that come up, that we're really solid about the deadlines. And so that I want to make sure none of those things happen.
And I'm glad you are. Here's the ending of this news broadcast.
Free camp remains open and will remain that way through the summer of 2020. Today there were 54 people camping there with room for six more occupants. In Santa Cruz, Phil Gomez, KSBW, Action News 8.
So that claim that the camp is partially vacant now, it's kind of interesting to me.
Well, that's interesting to me because they claim to have a waiting list of like 30 people. So if they have a waiting list of 30 people, I mean, I would think that vacancies, especially up to six, would be rare.
And also, it's not mentioned that there is a waiting list by our indomitable reporter, Phil Gomez.
Right. That's another thing that like is mentioned to us in like private, you know, when the director's talking to us. And they're openly speaking, they'll say, yeah, we have a waiting list, about 26 to 30 people on it. But when you ask them on record, they often don't confirm that, or it's just ridiculous.
Alicia, anything coming up in the next week you want to alert people to? Because this, of course, broadcast is going out tonight.
Well, they have some stuff going on at the Resource Center for Nonviolence coming up. I think they have, like, stuff envelopes and have tea and, like, stuff envelopes and have pizza. Drew has Friday night is the agenda.
5:30. 5:30, it's an agenda examination at City Hall at room 10, right next to the City Council offices.
And I believe that's all I have.
Okay.
Right now.
All right, well, thank you.
I'm dealing with these kids and my college classes right now, so.
Indeed.
It's a big day in the RV.
Well, I wish you well.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.